This is a dirty podcast. It's dirty.
You need to watch everything I'm about to show you, okay?
That's all right. It's from the 90s. It's probably from SNL. We're good.
No, it's not. Let's try. Okay, what? All right. I don't care if you've seen it. Please just pay attention, okay? And I'll explain. Just watch.
The following program contains adult language and mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
One more time.
Hey everybody, welcome to One Song Each. It's a podcast of musical banter, where we each pick one song and discuss what it means to us, or something. I'm a legal machine, with me is...
Joe Fixit.
Diablo Frank.
Please explain your song.
So my selection for this week, month, whatever, well my song for this week was Yankee Rose by David Lee Roth. It's a 1986 single off of his album, whatever it was called. Eat 'Em and Smile was the name of the album. I think this was his big album after he left Van Halen. Anyway, none of that shit's fucking important. Are you ready for the new sensation? Well, here's a shot heard round the world. All you bathroom boys salute when a flag unfurls. Well, guess who's back in circulation? Now, I don't know what you may have heard, but what I need right now is the original Good Time Go. This song had a huge impact on my childhood.
I'm assuming the way you dressed?
No, but close. Because this was the first time, and I'm talking about the video, if you haven't seen the video for Yankee Rose by David Lee Roth, go watch it where nobody else is around. Because that was the first time I saw a grown man and was like, is David Lee Roth hot?
So he...
Wait,
he got you to question your sexuality.
Listen, I'm as straight as it fucking goes, all right? But, little chub, if you haven't seen the video, David Lee Roth, basically, I don't want to use the word prance because that has some connotations to it. He's basically, for 4 minutes...
seducing you.
seducing me, thank you, through this Satan box.
With his gyration of moments.
Unbelievable gyrations. Damn straight. Those aren't just gyrations. That is otherworldly gyrations. And I don't know, I guess...
Wait. How old were you when you first saw this song?
I probably saw it sometime in the mid-90s. I didn't see it in 86. I don't think we had cable in 86.
Okay, so I'm just wondering if you were like a young boy laying down on the ground and maybe rolling on the ground maybe caused some feelings to occur as you're watching the video. I'm just saying.
I mean, in the
We've all brushed a couch. We've all brushed against a couch and, you know, just got a special feeling.
In the first 10 seconds of the video, David Lee Roth walks past a panning camera to reveal that he's wearing assless chaps. I mean, it's the first 10 seconds of the fucking video. It's ridiculous. So the whole rest of the video is David Lee Roth going through different leotard changes, and he's basically wearing like spandex with a thong over it to accentuate his posterior. And then there are some points in this video where he's doing rocket kicks, which for a grown man is not easy to do. So you gotta tip your cap in the very least. He's doing full rocket kicks where he's doing the knee up and then the full leg kick where his ankle is like eye level, like in his face.
Yes, he curly knocked himself out not too long ago.
But here's the thing is that usually, like, I'm not saying usually dudes aren't doing rocket kicks on MTV. It's very bizarre. Even in the glammiest of glam rock where they're wearing full on makeup and eyeliner. David Lee Roth has been an entertainer for his entire career, like nonstop. But he saw all these glam rock bands and was like, that's it? check this shit out. And he came out in a leotard.
He went to 11?
That was beyond 11. I don't know what number that was. This number has not been touched before or since. Just unbelievably bizarre. And do you know what the amazing thing is? Do you know what the song Yankee Rose is about?
I know I've heard it in many a strip club.
Do you know what... I'm serious. Well, no. You watch the video and you listen to the whole song. Do you have any idea what Yankee Rose is about?
No.
It's about Statue of Liberty. That song and that video is for a song dedicated to the Statue of Liberty. Those are the bright lights, city lights. That's... Yeah. She's a vision from coast to coast, sea to shining sea. It's the Statue of Liberty.
Very patriotic.
What the fuck? I mean, it's not uncommon that you get a video that just completely it has nothing to do with what the actual song's about. But like this is
I just want to state this for the record.
Most unbelievable fucking pageantry.
I've heard this song several times. In a strip club, usually with a white stripper named Bambi Star Rose.
So, well, let me tell you, sir, when you're getting that over the pants handy from that stripper, she is doing it to a song dedicated to the goddamn Statue of Liberty. I don't want you to
patriotic song.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is up there with the Star Spangled Banner.
I mean, I would say it trumps the Star Spangled Banner in some forms.
They added that to the bass later on.
Yeah. Just a ridiculous... That video is... If you want to look at, like, excess glam rock, that's fucking it. It's the most unbelievable. And I don't know why I just started explaining why I remember, but I will never freaking forget. I don't even remember most of the fucking song, but I will never forget that video. Because the first time I saw it as a kid, I was like, this is
America.
This... No, it's not America. There's nothing America about that. There's something I had never seen before, ever.
Well, just the fact that it made you feel these unknown feelings in your nether
dude,
region.
Dude, he's got... His hair is teased to like 13 in that video. And he's obviously working. And he's walking like he's in high heels the whole video too. It's very, very bizarre. Very bizarre. But just telling you why.
Well, the fact you got a chub. Semi-chub.
You know what's really amazing is you scroll through the YouTube comments on that video. Because I was going to... It's YouTube. So it's going to be a bunch of, you know, people go, oh, look at this stupid shit. And using a bunch of freaking slurs, right? Instead, it's, this is when rock and roll was great. And I'm reading all these like Trumpies that are like, that's rock and roll. That's Steve Vai, probably. You know, that's Steve Vai. That's the best guitar solo I've ever heard. David Lee Roth is rock and roll. And I'm thinking like, holy shit, this is like the opposite of rock and roll. You know what I mean? It's like there's some weird psychological shit going down in this video. I don't know if it's like a Rorschach test or something. I don't know what's going on in that video, but it's very, very bizarre. And I wanted you to experience that.
I have just one question for you. Did you ever rub one off to it?
No.
Okay, so make sure.
No. But thanks for ruining the there's sort of like subtle jokes throughout this section and you just come out and ask if I jerked off to the fucking video. That's not funny. That's just super weird.
That's funny to me.
No, you just make it really fucking uncomfortable. No, I never masturbated to David Lee Roth in that video. I'm just saying that there is some weird shit going on in that video.
Okay.
One, at some point in the future, I'm probably going to also introduce a David Lee Roth into this show, a David Lee Roth song. Two, the man has a fine fucking ass, and I really want you to acknowledge that. The man has a great ass, well accentuated, he's got moves. I'm not saying that I'm sexually attracted to this individual. I'm not insinuating that. It's important. If you look at the Kinsey scale, you have to be comfortable enough with encounters involving the same sex to be 100% hetero. Because if you're uncomfortable with the sexual appeal of your own sex, then that's something that's unresolved and that brings up some questions. The truly confident 100% heterosexual can go, that man has a beautiful ass, like Jon Snow. You could not have watched the season finale of Game of Thrones this season, looked at Jon Snow's ass, and not appreciated as a work of art. That man had an incredible ass.
I mean, that's why chicks freaking love the guy.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons why Captain America is one of the most popular heroes in the Marvel Universe, because of that cap ass. The chicks dig the fucking cap ass.
Chris Evans is a good looking dude.
Have you ever... If you go on the internet...
And I've talked about Chris Evans in our Civil War podcast.
The ladies have a gif of him punching the bag, the boxing bag, the stinger to... What was it? The first Avenger that he's doing that?
Maybe.
Where he's doing the punching bag? And it's just his ass rocking back and forth. I've seen that gif posted by so many chicks...
There's also the gif when he comes out after he got the super soldier serum and what do you call it?
Oh, yeah. And
Carter
goes to touch him
and then pulls
his man
back,
boob. Yeah.
I see that one a lot too.
So you have to be able to acknowledge. It's like Michelangelo's David. It's just a beautiful work of art. And you cannot diminish what a showman David Lee Roth is. If you're going to see a live show, especially if you don't have the full pyrotechnics of a whole Kiss spectacle, the man basically uses the same moves as a very accomplished cheerleader. Rocket kicks, flips, jumps, splits. Incredible showman. Yeah. He's spinning the fucking mic stand like a baton. You gotta acknowledge the showmanship. I couldn't even tell what the name of the song was watching it. I really don't remember the video. I think I might have seen the opening at some point. I definitely remembered the cultural appropriation of David Lee Roth running around like a savage in body paint with feathers and a spear and everything. No, but that was the album cover. Cultural appropriation wasn't such a big thing in 86. That was actually the 100th anniversary of the inauguration, or the they're actually mounting the Statue of Liberty once it got to New York. None of that is relevant to the video. You can't hear any of the lyrics.
He's taking the guitar and having sex with one of the pieces of drum kit.
So he did it with the mic.
Yeah.
I know. He did it on like nine... Yeah. Songs about the Statue of Liberty.
It's all... It's
fucking amazing. David Lee Roth.
What AC/DC did for lyrics, David Lee Roth did with stage presence. It's all about the fucking. Everything he does is a overt symbol of him fucking. It's all about his dexterity and his stamina. He's letting people know he's a peacock ready to peacock stuff. This was the third single off that album. Definitely the worst single, but a compelling music video, a compelling performance video.
It's not a bad song. The chorus is good. It was in Grand Theft Auto too. It saw another it was in Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, I don't remember the song at all, and I can't, after watching the video, I can't recite a single thing.
What were the other singles off this album?
California Girls and Just the Gigolo.
Oh, were they both?
Those were covers though, weren't they? I want to say there was one more.
So maybe Steve Vai provided the patriotism, and he was like,
I just want to fuck it. Hey, what's this video? Hey, this is my Diamond Dave impression. Hey guys, what is this song about? Statue of Liberty. Huh, who fucking cares? Let's take some guitars and fuck some drum kits. All right, hey, where's my thong at?
They had to back up his leotards. He had a truck full of leotards. A truck.
Multiple times. That was definitely changed.
David E. Roth was or was not the White Prince, factoring in that he pioneered the assless chaps in music videos.
I don't know what it was. What do you mean? Oh, the White Prince. As in, he's the white version of Prince? I don't... I think...
Well, just because he wore assless chaps?
No, because everything was like... It's all about sex, and it's all about the guttural sex sounds that he makes. Because he specifically works that androgyny. He's promoting a heterosexuality via androgyny and feminized masculinity.
Wouldn't Bowie be the white prince?
Yeah, maybe Bowie. I would say Bowie
Specifically is like the sex god kind of thing. But I guess were the girls really into David Lee Roth, though? I don't remember the girls being into him.
I'm not sure. I think so.
Or
maybe he just gave off the persona.
I just think for that time period of the 80s, he was the it man. But as far as the prince, I wouldn't say, because I mean,
I don't think they were ever that big.
No, he never was big enough to be called the prince. I mean, you got,
if he was that big, you wouldn't have been kicked out of Van Halen.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
So if you're gonna give up that title, it's definitely Elvis. Or who else?
I think Bowie. If you're going
David Bowie, definitely. I just can't see David Lee Roth as the prince, the white prince. I mean,
I just don't think he was ever.
Maybe he's the equivalent of all of Kiss in one guy type thing, like a one man Kiss band.
He wasn't as butch or as threatening as Kiss was, though. The demon was kind of scary looking. They had flames, they had blood spitting. It's black leather and silver studs. That was not what.
Iron Maiden.
I was more scared of the lead singer of Iron Maiden or Judas Priest than I was of Kiss. I thought Kiss was like a bunch of clowns, the pre-juggalos of their era.
I've never seen them. Kiss was like the rock and roll monkeys, is all they were.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a show.
Because I remember seeing Judas Priest and he came out with the whips and the leather. I was thinking, God damn, like they wore the spikes and shit. I remember thinking, like, those dudes are like bikers. I had never looked at Kiss and were like, ooh, the demon looks so
cool. I just think
cool.
David Lee Roth is just David Lee Roth.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anybody. I mean, look, did you see the Rockette kicks? Prince ain't doing those kicks. No offense to Prince, all right? I'm not trying to cap on Prince here. God rest his soul. He's not pulling off those Rockette kicks.
Yeah. I'll give him, he's very acrobatic, but
similar stature though, right? David Lee Roth isn't a tall guy, is he?
Is he?
I think he's tiny. Like, it wasn't Prince tiny dude? Well, probably not as small as Prince. Prince was like 5'2".
Yeah, Prince wore like, you know, kids' clothes.
Yeah. Well, David Lee Roth wore
young men,
women's girls clothes, little girls clothes.
Lots of leotards.
Man, I'm telling
just
you,
just needed some ribbons. Didn't he do a video with ribbons?
Probably.
Where he's like he's hopping around.
Don't use the P word.
Hopping around with the ribbons.
I don't know. It's possible,
because I know I've seen a video where he has
the jump video. Is he doing it in jump?
I remember seeing a video where he's like with nunchucks and he has other weapons and he's kind of
I don't know, dude. All I know is that sounds way different than what I just watched.
Oh no, he evolved. David definitely evolved. But
anyway, I just wanted to share that video with you. you guys.
Thank you.
Because it's one of the most amazing pieces of... they should have put that shit on the Voyager spacecraft instead of your One-Eyed Willie blue song or whatever you played for us that one time. Because...
One-Eyed Willie? This is not the fucking Goonies, man. What the fuck? Okay, Chunk.
Was it Shoeless Joe Blues Guy or whatever?
This is not football either, you asshole.
It's based Shoeless Joe Jackson or whatever. Oh, I love it. That was my favorite blues artist, Bo Jackson.
You know, they do say if you don't love the blues, you have a hole in your soul. Just saying.
Yeah, I know. You said that.
Yes.
You said that.
So am I going second?
He looks a little worried.
It's hard to follow up David Lee Roth and Thong.
We're definitely going to go in a different direction from there.
What are you trying to say? Look, I was just...
Young,
pressure.
No.
I'm sure he was laying on a shag carpet on the ground.
Well, actually...
No, okay, well, look. Look. So what's his name from Poison?
Brett Michaels.
Brett Michaels. Look, Brett Michaels is a good-looking dude. And he dressed like a girl. So, I mean, look. He's an attractive man.
I'm not attacking.
Look, you seem to get really defensive about this. You seem really, really put off by this subject.
Oh, no. I mean, if you're going to say good-looking man, I mean, Chris Evans, yeah. I don't think David Lee Roth is a good-looking man in one bit. Looks like a homeless guy to me. And
do you want to rewind where he was shaking his butt in that thong in front of the...
Nah.
You don't want to?
Nah. Mm. I prefer my larger asses.
I think you got some... Dude, that was not a flat... Look.
I prefer to trust a big bot and a smile, but...
That was not a flat ass, all right? David Lee Roth...
Oh, no, it was not negative ass, but...
I think he does some squats or something, too. Pretty good.
Nah. Still pretty flat in my world.
No way, dude.
Yeah.
Mm-mm, no way. No, that's not a flat. That's not a flat ass. I'm sorry.
In your world, that's fine, but in my world,
I'm just saying. Look,
it's not a negative ass, but it's not a big ass.
All right. Well, I'm glad I got you to discuss David Lee Roth ass a little bit. That's where I was going for this whole thing. So.
He's coming Saturday night, February 7th. David Lee Roth will drive the Duluth Arena crazy. Cellar Door presents Dynamite Live. At the Duluth Arena ticket office at all usual locations. Saturday night, February 7th. Don't miss David Lee Roth.
Did you know that most wine coolers have more calories a bottle than a glazed donut? A California cooler has more than a slice of Boston cream pie. And Bartles and James has more calories than a slice of old-fashioned pound cake. But new Dewey Stevens Premium Light is light, with about the same number of calories as a cup of 2% low-fat milk. And Dewey's a lot more fun.
Hey, Dewey!
New Dewey Stevens Premium Light.
You do me right.
Anheuser-Busch St. Louis.
This is a K-Hits 97-second update. I'm Hedy Lynn Hurdies, and here's what's happening. President Reagan, in his broadcast address this evening, said there's only one group of losers in his tax plan, individuals and corporations who aren't paying their fair share. Reagan said he has a plan that will be the strongest pro-family initiative in post-war history. It would cut overall taxes by 7%, while taxes paid by corporations would go up by 9%. A lot of new jobs could be opening up this year. So says a Dun & Bradstreet survey, which shows that more than a third of the nation's businesses plan to hire more employees before the end of the year, creating 2 million jobs. Good news for tenants in the City of Angels. The City Council has given its okay for the long-sought reduction of annual rent increases. Now landlords will have to take an average of the total consumer price index for the preceding year into consideration before hiking rents. Well, the Frestacy septuplets aren't just letters of the alphabet anymore. The five survivors have real names: Patricia Ann, James Martin, Stephen Earl, Bonnie Marie, and Richard Charles, and they're reportedly coming along fine. Jeffrey Stewart, you know, the guy who's lived on a billboard above the Sunset Strip since December? He'll marry Penny Floyd on that billboard June 6th. They met on Valentine's Day when they spoke via a special phone line. No word on whether the couple will make their nest on high. I'm Hedy Lynn Hurdies, and now Janine Wolf with the greatest K-Hits of the 60s, 70s, and 80s. That adds up to 97.1 FM, KHTZ, Los Angeles.
And actually reconsidered too, we actually are kind of got a bit of a segue on this one. I was just really starting to get into pop type music. It was around 87 that I really started to pay attention to popular music. So 88, 89, I was still kind of had my cherry intact when it came to that sort of stuff. First time I ever saw Susie and the Banshees would have been around 88, 89. More one of the brave periods where we had cable. This is probably a little too early for you, Mac, but Fix It may remember this.
I don't know dick about Susie and the Banshees. This is more your era.
The video for Peekaboo was not what I was expecting. A sort of a David Lynchian nightmare scenario. Black with like flashlights or like with strobe lights. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've seen the video. But it's like guys with masks with long noses that are very phallic and people gyrating and stuff. The song is, I believe, about about, you know, like a whorehouse or a fetish parlor or some kind of bullshit. A early user of sampling was contemporaneous or predated the use of sampling in hip hop, because they had apparently done an arrangement of a cover song, and then they took that arrangement and they clipped out parts of it they liked, then they played it in reverse, and then they put additional instrumentation on top of that, including one of the rare uses in rock music of an accordion. Very unique song, well-received song. It was like one of their first big hits in the U.S. From there, I had heard their song from the 1992 soundtrack to Batman Returns. They did the music over the closing credits, Face to Face, which I think is a great song. I really enjoyed that one. I don't know if you guys remember that one at all.
I'd have to hear it.
Yeah.
Face to face, my lovely foe.
But one of my big moments of hearing Susie and the Banshees was in the mid-90s, 94 to 96, somewhere in there. Once again, I have to mention the radio stations, local radio station, The Rocket, which played a lot of college rock, and especially stuff from like the 80s heavily. And so I got to hear a lot of Susie and the Banshees from that time period. They often played. Their first big hit was, if I recall correctly, one of their biggest hits early on was a cover of the Beatles' Dear Prudence. They also did a version of The Passenger, which is one that's appeared on this show before. And that was my introduction to that song.
Passenger by Iggy Pop.
They did This Wheel's on Fire, which I believe is a Bob Dylan cover.
It was definitely better than the actual Bob Dylan version.
Yeah. But the specific song that I may have heard at some point prior, but I really never heard until, like really heard and paid attention to until that period of time, was Cities and Dust. But let me give you a little bit of background on Susie Sue. Neither one of you has a strong familiarity with Susie and the Banshees. Okay, Susie Sue grew up in the 70s, had a very eccentric family. She was, I think, born outside of the UK. Her father milked snake venom as a job and also was a drunk. The poor girl...
That's a bad combination. I just got to...
The poor girl was raped when she was 9 years old, or was at least sexually assaulted when she was 9 years old, and her parents did nothing about it. They wouldn't even talk about it, and it was very traumatizing for her. Her father ended up dying when she was 14. She had a whole bunch of health problems. She was always kind of an outcast, always kind of a freak. She never fit in. And so she eventually gravitated toward the gay scene in the UK, a lot of like discos and stuff. And she started experimenting with her own presentation, like her own visual style. She liked to stand apart. She was familiar with David Bowie and his playing around with identity and visual representation. And to a large degree, Susie Sue created the goth look, because she was one of the first people out there that did the pancake makeup, the dark eyes, the dark lipstick, the teased black hair, incorporating fetish gear like fishnets and bondage gear like corsets. And so she developed this look that we're now very familiar with from goth. And if you're a comic book fan, you're probably familiar from the character of Death that Neil Gaiman did, who was always very similar looking to early Susie Sue. So Susie Sue eventually gravitates toward the punk scene. She becomes essentially a groupie of the Sex Pistols and is really friendly with them. She's a part of a whole coterie of girls that are known to be like fans of Sex Pistols and go from show to watch them. Eventually, she decided to take up like an Andy Warhol mentality where there's no reason why the people in the crowd can't also be on the stage. And so she eventually developed her own band. She put together the Banshees. And these guys ended up touring with the Sex Pistols. They appeared on a live program in, I believe, the late 70s, where the presenter, as some of the British guys will do, was drunk on air and said something like inappropriate or flirtatious towards Susie Sue. And one of the members of the Sex Pistols, I think the guitarist, got pissed off and started cursing at him on live television. And if you know anything about the English, they're much cooler about nudity and sexuality than they are about foul language, especially back in the 70s. That was a big scandal when that happened. And because of Susie's association with the Sex Pistols, immediately everybody knew who Susie and the Banshees were, because they were headliners because of that outburst. So not only did Susie Sue basically invent the goth look, but she's not an early adopter of punk, but she is a pioneer of post-punk, which eventually leads into the goth music scene, which she helped to influence, and the new wave music scene, which I'm a huge fan of. They have a number of hits in the UK. It takes them a while to get into the US. Their first really big hit in the States was Cities and Dust, which came out in 1985. Are y'all familiar with that song?
A little,
yes.
I think.
In fact, I heard it just the other day.
Why don't you cue it up?
What is it? Cities in the Dust?
No, just Cities and Dust.
Cities and Dust.
Yep, I heard this the other day.
That's the first time I've heard it.
What?
Like I said, I'm not sure if I heard it before, the song before 94 or not, but it was thereabouts. And the first time I heard the song, and for years after hearing the song, because we didn't have the internet back then, and I did not own a copy of the song, so I couldn't read the lyrics or anything, I thought for the longest time it was about an adulterous relationship. I thought it was about a woman walking in on her guy and choking on the dirty sight of the affair and all this kind of stuff. I saw you crying. I saw you lying. I thought that she was referring to either as telling lies or like actually lying, like in this filthy bed and all this kind of stuff. It was years later before I found out what the song was actually about.
Pompeii, right? Water was running. Children were running. You were running out of time under the mountain. A golden fountain. Were you praying at the Larry's shrine? Lars shrine? But oh, your city lies in dust, my friend. Oh, your city lies in dust, my friend.
We found you hiding. We found you lying, choking on the dirt and sand. The former glories and all the stories dragged and washed with eager hands. Hot and burning in your nostrils, pouring down your gaping mouth. The molten bodies, blanket of cinders, caught in the throes. Which is, I think, part of what threw me off is I did catch the caught in the throes. I thought it was the throes of lust, not the throes of death. Do you want to tell folks about the city of Pompeii in case they don't know about this occurrence?
Oh, well, yeah, it got blown up by Mount Vesuvius, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all them some bitches got, preserved in ash.
Yeah, and apparently...
And now you can go walk around fucking the gift shop there.
And I think literally the band went to Pompeii, looked around, was like, holy shit, this is awesome, we need to write a song about this. And they wrote a fucking awesome song about that.
Great
song. I love that song. I love the sound of the chimes. I love the rhythm. I love the guitars. It encompasses so much what I love about the new wave sound, which I'm a huge fan of. I'm a fan of Suzy and the Band, but I'm a greatest hits single level fan. You know, I've got like the greatest hits album, I've got some singles, you know, a few B-sides, but I'm not like a deep dive fan. But I respect the hell out of Susie Sue. I recognize what an incredible pioneer she was. I don't know if you guys know this, but Robert Smith actually was in Susie and the Banshees at one point.
No shit.
Yeah, and I'm pretty confident, although he might dispute it because he's tried to say that, oh yes, I was wearing makeup back in the early 70s when I was in school. I'm pretty sure he ripped off Susie Sue's basic look for the iconic look of The Cure. And obviously he came out of the post-punk scene as well. So really, I don't know if you have The Cure without Susie and the Banshees. As far as this song goes, not only do I think it's a great song, cool lyrics, cool subject matter, but I actually, somewhat contemporaneous to this, I came up with my own superhero character. And I don't know if I had seen the movie The Crow before or after this, but you've got the sequence in The Crow where Brandon Lee is running across the rooftops and they're playing Burning by The Cure. It's a really cool sequence. You know, people who are fans of The Crow especially are fans of that particular sequence. That particular song is one of probably the highlight of the movie. Definitely a soundtrack highlight. That's a great soundtrack. Well, again, I don't know if I was inspired by that movie or if it was just contemporaneous to that, but with my superhero character, I always pictured it the same way. The movie starts with the raindrops and you're hearing the chimes of Cities of Dust, and then you have the hero running across rooftops. That song really kind of is important to me because, you know, it's tied into something that's in my own mind, my own headspace, the movie of my hero. And so it's like the soundtrack song for that character in my mind, but also just as a song by itself, the unique sound to it. I always groove to it. I never want to turn this song off. Anytime it comes on, I'm excited to hear it, and I just love the song to pieces.
Yeah, it came on First Wave the other day when I was driving home, and I didn't change it. And it's one of the highest compliments I can play. I can pay a song. I didn't change the channel.
Yeah,
it's a good song.
Yeah.
And, it's obviously it's part of that First Wave wave of music, and you can just tell there's so much the chimes, it just sounds so first wavy.
Yeah.
You
know it doesn't sound like any other songs. There's so many different sounds. It's such a tapestry of sound.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it sounds like all of them kind of in a way without sounding exactly like that.
But also having a lot of unique textures that you don't hear in any of their songs. So it's a very distinct, very unique song.
I like it. I dig that song.
Yeah, sorry, man. I have like no.
I can't believe you've never heard.
I think I might have heard it on I think I might have heard it on a mixtape or something, but I don't remember that song distinctively. I know.
So what is she saying in the chorus? The
It's a good song. I enjoyed it. I liked it.
It's a great song. That's probably the only Susie and the Banshee song that I know.
I think I know a couple of. I mean, they're...
it's just funny. I'm talking like 2 days ago. I was listening to that shit.
The other part of the conversation that segues, as I forgot to mention, who appeared in a movie about the city of Pompeii? Jon Snow.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
So it all ties together. Androgyny, theatrical performances, costumes and rock music, and Jon Snow.
Conflicting feelings about your sexuality.
No, Susie's hot. I got no problem with that.
I was talking about Jon Snow.
Oh, you know, I'm not really into Jon Snow. I'm not a big fan of Jon Snow. I respect his ass, but I'm got my fingers crossed. I'm hoping that they actually leave Jon Snow dead in The Winds of Winter. I'm hoping that that's what...
the twist?
George R. R. Martin did, yes. Because to me, the show really gets derailed when Jon Snow comes back. So I really hope he stays dead in the books.
Save it for the podcast.
We're not going to podcast. Game of Thrones sucks now. We're not going to podcast in Game of Thrones. It's The Walking Dead now. It's become The Walking Dead.
Look. The last episode redeemed the two prior shitty episodes.
No.
Look, dude, I'm telling you right now that the second to last episode was my least favorite episode of any of the fucking 7 seasons of that show.
Yeah.
And the last episode was good enough that it fucking terminated some of these shitty storylines I'm so tired of in this. Oh my god.
I think the entire last season
of
episode?
What?
Warp episode where they were warping everywhere.
Yeah, it was fucking the whole premise of the episode was fucking stupid.
They got a lot of complaints about that.
What the fuck am I know. When the directors of the show were coming out and I'm like no prizing their shit, you know that it was actually bad.
Yeah.
Like normally they would never address complaints about the fucking show. That one they were literally fucking
like apologizing. Like, yeah, we understand that, you know, people were kind of teleporting.
It was like a shitty fan fiction episode is what it was. It was like it was bad fan fiction.
So my song. Can we do this damn song?
That song. That episode, though, was another level.
Are you fucking assholes? And cut. Start here. So my song is not going to be as in-depth as your songs, because apparently y'all songs had a profound effect on your lives. My song is just, when I hear it, I remember a time and place type thing. And this song really kind of reminds me of that time and place.
For me, it's beer commercials.
Really?
Wasn't this a beer commercial?
Mm-hmm. So we just heard James Gang, Funk 49. Now, this song has a special memory for me because I think I was just out of high school. So a lot of my friends growing up had bands and would travel, I guess, the local circuit. And I, at the time, was dating Pussycat. And a friend of mine, a very close friend of mine, had a band. And they needed roadies type guys. Just help people move the equipment. Help out. And so me and another friend got picked to go, and she kept fighting with me because I was going to be gone. We were going to Mardi Gras in New Orleans, and we were going to be gone for, I think, 3 or 4 days. And she was fighting with me the whole time. As we're loading onto this big-ass van they had rented, this white van, she's still fighting with me in front of everybody, yelling, screaming, da-da-da-da. So the running gag the whole drive there was they would continuously play this fucking song over and over and over to remind me of the shit that was going on because they thought it was funny. So we get to New Orleans. The gig sucked ass, but we had fun. We got got free beer. We're drinking. We're getting drunk. I'd never been to, I had never been to Mardi Gras before, so we were kind of scared. We were actually sleeping in the van. We would sneak in and take baths in the sinks and stuff. And it was a crazy time. And again, my friends thought it was funny to continue. Anytime we were doing nothing, the song would come on, or someone would play it on a jukebox, or they would go up and request the song. So I heard the song a shitload of times that weekend. And the reason it comes to mind is it was the time where we were at the Mardi Gras, and I believe I saw a 250-pound woman stripped naked on the street and dance to it. So that's pretty much it for me.
What do you think about the song?
Oh, the first time I heard it when I was younger, I liked it. That trip cemented it in my mind for what it is. Just a reminder of how your friends can be complete assholes and pick a song that's going to be their little torture tool for the whole weekend.
It's a little repetitive.
Oh, absolutely.
They really go for the bow
out. I just remember hearing it over and over. I lost track how many times. And they thought it was hilarious.
I swear to God that was in a beer commercial.
Really?
I swear they used that for a beer commercial.
So, but I mean, I had fun. Dude, that was my first
Mardi
Gras.
I can hear the of a beer can opening with like a bunch of chicks and probably a dog.
But that was like
every beer commercial in the 80s had some fucking dog in it.
But this was like the first time I went to a city, the second city like that, where such decadence was like, I mean, I had never been to Mardi Gras and it was insane.
Decadence?
Yeah. Dude, anything went. I'd never seen that before. Like, I've been to Tijuana. Tijuana was crazy, but like people were just drinking. It was just crazy. But you felt safe. I never felt unsafe, but it was just crazy. And I think I was like maybe 18, 19 years old.
And you just heard Funk 49 the whole time. Every time you think of all these memories?
Honestly, when my sister got married, when we were coming back from the wedding, we stopped to New Orleans, and this song popped in my head when we were there, because I remember like walking down the street, and we went to this one bar. I remember seeing the bar, and one of my friends walked up there, because, you know, you could do requests, and they fucking requested the song, and they played it, and everybody's singing. I'm just like, it's like the 50th time I've heard this goddamn song. And of course, on the way back, we would play, you know, they're playing everything, and then this song would be somewhere in the rotation, and they got a kick out of just fucking with me the whole time. But it made me feel special.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, just throw a little background on it. James Gang band formed around 66, lasts till about 77. Best known as the band that launched Joe Walsh's career, who went on to work with the Eagles. This was probably their signature hit, or at least one of the major ones. It was released on the album The James Gang Rides Again in 1970. I don't know what the chart position on the song was, because that was in the AOR period, album-oriented rock, so people bought full albums with the intention of listening to the full album. But obviously, this song's been used a fuck ton of times. I wouldn't be shocked if Spuds McKinski didn't do something in a commercial at some point with this song. It appears in the movies Rounders, Dogtown and the Z-Boys, Devil's Rejects. It was on an episode of The Sopranos, Grand Theft Auto, Rock Band. And I just gotta say that my father had a pretty major influence on my interest in music. It really wasn't until the 90s before he started actively trying to get me to listen to his music and inform me about music. He got me much bigger into the Beatles than I'd ever been before, for instance. And I definitely have a broader interest in rock music, but especially stuff from the 60s and 70s, because that was really a blind spot for me. I was familiar with the 50s and 60s from growing up and from my stepfather. I was familiar with the 80s and 90s from my own musical interests, but this was a real blind spot for me. My father was very into the 70s stuff, which I'm still not super into, but at least I'm much more familiar with because of this. But in his vast CD collection, he has like 4 or 5 James Gang CDs. He's a big James Gang fan, clearly. He's probably gonna be pissed off that you took one of his songs if he ever appears on the show. But honestly, I like this song. I know this song, but for the most part, I have no interest in the James Gang, and that's one of the areas where, as much as he must like it for him to have all those albums, I don't give a shit about them as a band. I do like this tune.
I can totally picture your dad driving around in like a T-top iRock Z Camaro listening to Funk 49.
I think he had a Z.
I know where you're going. I'm sure if I told Pussycat about this, I never told Pussycat that they played the song over and over and over. And I'm pretty sure if she had known that.
Let me tell you something also. Segue. Eagles fucking suck. Super overrated.
The Eagles?
The Eagles are fucking terrible. If I hear Hotel California one more time, oh my God. Hotel Killa my brain out.
My father has a story about the Hotel California.
Like the actual Hotel California? The song?
The song.
Oh, shit.
So that might come up at some future time. So, teaser.
Take It to the Limit is their only good song.
One more time. I like that one, yeah. Well, my problem is I was trying to think of favorite Eagles songs, and I'm thinking of just the Journey songs.
Oh.
So just it's like,
small town boy. Born and raised.
I was doing When the Lights Go Out in the City.
Yeah.
On the bay.
Could the Eagles be any more... Could the Eagles be any more different than fucking Journey?
But see, the funny thing is,
Journey is a good version of the.
So wait, is it the Eagles you don't like, or their songs?
Are you talking about like the species?
No, the band you asked.
No, I don't like the, I don't like any of their music.
Because honestly, I'm not a big fan of the Eagles, but I love. I want to say it was Los Lobos' version of Hotel California.
The Hotel California is just. It's a dumb song. I don't get it. I don't think it's even that catchy. But
I think
it's
is.
Just fucking played all the time. What's so catchy about it?
It's catchy, dude.
Welcome to the Hotel California. Welcome to the party, pal. I don't want to talk about the Eagles. I hate the Eagles. I shouldn't have brought it up.
Let's talk about the Eagles.
Fuck the Eagles and fuck Bob Dylan. You know what? That's two things, Bob Dylan. That's something.
Yeah, I'm cutting that out, man.
That's something.
He's been one of our fan supporters. We're not cheating on Bob.
That's what the Eagles and Bob Dylan have in common is that Los Lobos can play their songs better than both of them.
Probably. I can agree with that. Yeah. Why?
Because the only thing.
I know where you're going.
You have to sing it slower. That was way too fast.
Yeah, cut all that out. Cut all the Eagles shit out, too. I don't want to talk about the Eagles. I'm sure we're. There'll probably be some rabid Eagles fans that are going to get all pissed off.
Yeah, good.
I hate the fucking Eagles. Then. Eagles are fucking terrible.
Take it.
One more time. To limit.
Do you think of yourself primarily as a singer or as a poet?
No, I think of myself more as a song and dance man, you know.
Alias. You may call him Lucky Wilbury. You may call him Bobby. You may call him Zimmy. But the world calls him Bob Dylan. It's Pod Dylan, the only podcast dedicated to celebrating the work of Bob Dylan. Pod Dylan, hosted by the freewheeling Rob Kelly and a roster of special guests, examines Bob Dylan's discography one song at a time. Proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network, Pod Dylan is available weekly at fireandwaterpodcast.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.
Cold filtered Miller Genuine Draft. For those who've discovered its smooth draft taste, the world is a very cool place.
The Eagle. When you're ready to rock, Def Leppard, Aerosmith, Skinner, Bon Jovi, Queen, The Stones. 106.9 The Eagle. When you're ready to rock.
We received the social media attentions from Ali Batts, Keith G. Baker, 108 Sage, Agus Supriyatna, Dr. Ange, Batichapirak, Bone Dragon Comics, Brody's Kitchen, Cash Flag, Chris at Bat Books for Beginners, Dr. G Nerdologist, Dragons, Sexy Robots and Adventures Podcast, The Hoopers Podcast, Ice in the Face, Into the Weird, It's Plastic Man, Jared Albright, The Yard Sale Artist, Joe Crawford, Keith G. Baker, Kevin Dodgy, Christados, Longbox Crusade, Max Romero, Rad Adventures Podcasting Network, Randy Caldwell, Relatively Geeky, Resurrections and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Ryan Daly, Sean Michael Ortega, Secret Wars and Beyond Podcast, and Trekker Talk. Odell Abner Dracula wrote of Track 6, Side A. How on God's Kingdom did nobody pick Bored in the USA to tease out Frank's Infinity War, Thor, Wife, Savior Anxiety? It's a pretty good song, it's true. Additional shout-outs go to Comic Book Vault, David Golden Studios, FKA Jason, Jake and Tom Conquer Podcast, Justice First Dawn, Pod Dylan, Beardo Talks Film, Charlton Hero, Chris Sheehan, Doug Zawisha, Gord Tolton, Grateful Dalek, MGJ Productions, The Namor Submariner Podcast, Odd Dad Out Podcast, Pal Science, Warehouse 9, When It Was Cool, Siskoid, and Terrence Castingway.
One Song Each is a Rolled Spine Podcast. This is a not-for-profit fan production. Any copyrighted materials used is believed covered under fair use, with no infringement intended. Please leave your comments and criticisms on our website. We especially encourage participation on this show. Feel free to call in and leave a request. Maybe you'll even get featured on the show. We thank you for your rapt attention. Such a lovely life.